Dog Works Radio is sponsored by Alaska Dog Works. Check out their website at alaskadogworks.com.
Start your day tomorrow with The Daily Dog with Michelle Forte, the morning podcast on Dog Works Radio. Apple Podcast reviewer Patty Christensen calls it funny, smart, and filled with all the info I want to know about dogs. I love this show. Wake up with The Daily Dog. Available on Dog Works Radio on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your shows.
Radio Free Palmer, 89.5 KVRF, presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forte. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forte.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forte, and you're listening to Mushing Radio here on KVRF 89.7 in the Matsu Valley. RadioFreePalmer.org is our live streaming site. You can hear all of our episodes over on DogWorksRadio.com. You can also find us on social media, searching for Dog Works Radio. And calling in today from Alaska are two ladies that operate the August Fund. It's Janine Armour and Julie St. Louis. Julie and Janine, how are you today?
Doing well, thanks.
I'm great. How are you doing, Robert?
I am well, thank you. Thank you for joining us on the show today. If we could, when we talk, if you could just say your name, say, hey, this is Julie when we talk, and then we'll know who's talking, okay?
My name is Julie St. Louis, originally from New York State, northern New York State, and funny, so is Janine, but she can tell you that. And I ended up in Alaska by way of Washington, D.C., and working for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Ended up having a brief stint running a pet supply shop in Girdwood, where I encountered the mushing community through Nick Petit, actually, who was the Girdwood musher who wanted, to run Iditarod, and he ran with Jim Lanier's Northern Whites dogs. And then we noticed that lots of several dogs at Jim's kennel were older and weren't, running anymore. So it kind of started from there. But I'll let Janine tell you about her, too, and go from there. But right now I'm a freelance writer, and we also have the August Fund. So,
Janine, tell us about yourself, please.
As Julie said, I'm also from New York State. I grew up in Western New York State, outside Rochester, which is pretty funny because Julie and I didn't ever meet until we lived in Alaska. And I have a dog freaking out right now. Jack, stop. Life of the dog. And so I lived in Girdwood, and Julie had the pet store there. And stop it. Sorry, dogs. August, Julie, like she told you, had started noticing the need for retired sled dogs to maybe be placed in some homes. And August was actually staying there and had ended up escaping from somebody that was watching him for Julie, and he was hit by a car. And Julie and I didn't really know each other much at this point, and I had heard about August's plight and that he needed some help to be fixed. So I went ahead and started raising some money, brought it over to Julie, was introduced to Julie officially, and August. Long story short, fell in love with August, and Julie said, I think he wants to go home with you, so he came home with us. I fell in love with old sled dogs, and that was kind of the way the August Fund was formed, I guess.
So you guys operate is it a nonprofit, is that right?
Yes, we have nonprofit status now. This is Julie. We do officially have nonprofit status now, so which affords us, some things like tax deductible donations and, working with vets that want to work with nonprofits and, other things like that. So it's been a good thing to do. And has helped us, evolve over the years. We started this in 2012, and we've just kind of built it slowly, trying not to get overwhelmed with numbers of dogs and try to grow smartly as we can. And now we're really evolving to get the word out more and getting our official facility license, so we're fostering dogs and other things like that. So it's been good. We, you know, Janine and I both love dogs, and we've really felt after the whole situation with August, people kept coming into the shop saying, well, hey, this is great. Why don't you keep helping the dogs, you know, forget the mushers, help the dogs. So it's been actually quite rewarding, and these dogs are pretty amazing, so it's easy to help them.
So the August Fund is an organization that helps place retired Iditarod dogs to regular families' homes, you know, for families that are looking to foster or own one of these retired sled dogs. So, Janine, you had mentioned that you have August now, and you're knee-deep into this nonprofit with Julie. Where does it stand right now? Where does it look in terms of where you're getting your dogs from? Are you getting them from only in Alaska? Are you getting them from other places? And where are they being placed? Is it just here in Alaska, or is it otherwhere?
Julie, one thing I want to mention, though, it's not just Iditarod dogs. It did start that way, but it's Iditarod, Yukon Quest, and we also work with professional sprint mushers. And so our niche is dogs that are with racing kennels, dogs that have that history. You know, there are dogs that are born huskies that some people try to, you know, train, and they're sort of backyard dogs. That's a whole other thing entirely. We work with the racing kennels, whether it's sprint or distance, because those dogs tend to be very well trained, very well socialized, because they have to be. They're on the race trail. They're handled by vets. They're, you know, handled by, you know, volunteers. And so they really are pretty special dogs. And since they've been trained since birth, they learn really fast. Even if they started out outside in a kennel, they can go inside pretty quickly and learn what you want them to do and adapt. And some mushers actually have dogs, like Sebastian Schnull has 20 dogs in his living room often. So it's not uncommon that, you know, some mushers actually have dogs in their house. And then some, you know, don't. They're more utilitarian. But like I said, once the dog finds the couch, depending, you know, it might take them a week. Some dogs immediately hop on the couch, and then others take, you know, a while, a few months. But once they find it, sometimes it's hard to get them off the couch after. So,
right.
Yeah. I was going to jump in real quick too and say, you know, that's one of the most heartwarming things. This is Janine, obviously, about taking these dogs, you know, who've lived and, you know, for the most part, just been working dogs their whole life, and watching them to turn into, you know, kind of a quote unquote normal dog, you know, that lives on the couch and gets treats and stuff. And it's, you know, they work so hard and they're so eager to please their humans. It's almost like starting with a puppy in one sense, but they're so smart. They pick up really quick on everything and learn the indoor life pretty quickly. And you were asking too about if it's just Alaska that we place them. We've actually placed them in, do you know, Julie, how many states that we've actually placed other dogs in?
Well, we have California,
Minnesota,
Washington State, New York State. I'm trying to think where else. There's quite a few.
We have one guy.
Quite a few other
one
states.
One guy in California has adopted. How many now? I think five is he at?
I think he's five up to five or six. Yeah, and he doesn't have. I mean, obviously, he's adopting them when they're older, and they right now he has two at a time. But he and his wife have adopted. Once they started with one, they kind of went from there, or two actually. They started with two and. Because I kind of said, hey, you know, you really should just take two. But he's, you know, gone from there. And now they keep coming back for more because they're just wonderful, wonderful dogs. You know, they're in retirement. They usually retire about 8 years old or so, sometimes 12, depending. And by then they've they're ready to just be active still, like hiking and skijoring and even recreational mushing. But they're not going to need, to run 1,000 miles like they do when they're 2 or 3. So it turns out to be a really great, great opportunity for people to have an active companion, but also one that's, really easy to train.
So are you guys set up as sort of like a normal rescue in terms of, the application process and all of that? And if so, what is your process for folks that are looking to adopt one of these dogs?
Well, this is Julie. We don't necessarily call ourselves a rescue per se, because we don't feel like, in a lot of ways, we don't feel like we're rescuing, because the dogs aren't neglected for the most majority.
We're
of the
more
dogs
of like a go-between.
Yeah. Right. A facilitator, okay. I think, is probably the way to put it. You know, a lot of the dogs are well fed, very healthy, and they just have, probably 8. They live to be 16 or more, so they have a lot of years left. And so, we look at it as more like a facilitation of people who would be a good fit for these active retirees. And so our process is we learn from a musher that he or she has however many dogs, one maybe, or it could be they're selling out their kennel and retiring from mushing, and so it could be a dozen dogs. And so we find out and we get pictures. And we post the pictures on Facebook and our website. Mostly the Facebook is the most up to date. We post pictures. We get a bio of each dog from the musher and all the different details, any stories. And then people can go on there and ask to meet a dog. There's an application they fill out. And then it's a $150 adoption fee. And depending on whether the dog's spayed or neutered, sometimes we waive it. Sometimes, it just depends. And then we'll be a go-between. Either the mushers will keep the dogs until, like, Karin Hendrickson adopts out quite a few of her dogs. But we list them on our website, and we advertise through Facebook. And people then go to her and meet the dogs, and she chooses, and she selects and has them sign her contract. And then there's mushers who would rather, not deal with people as much. So we do that. We meet the people and we foster the dog and, we go through the process with the person. And then we just keep the mushers up to date on where their dogs end up.
And that was actually my next question. If the musher doesn't keep the dogs, as you had mentioned, where do they stay in that time? Do you have a facility, a dog yard or so, or do they go to other mushers, like sort of like a foster system?
Well, we have a couple of things we do. We have a foster. I have a foster spot here where I am in Chugiak. And depending on the dog and how they're socialized and what who they get along with and things like that, they could start out in a pen area, which are just separate kennel areas, with a doghouse, no chains, just a pen. Or they might come directly right in the house and start out that way. It just depends on what they're comfortable with. Some dogs will run right in the house and others need a bit of a transition period. So, and then we also have another person in Wasilla named Holly Thorson, who runs what she calls Fort Husky, and she's been taking several fosters. She prefers the oldest ones, like the 12 to 15-year-olds. And so if we have an older one, we'll send it her way, and she'll, work with them and bring them into her cabin. Same kind of setup as here. And then we have other people who volunteer to foster one dog now and then. And then we also have Arctic Tails, which is a doggy daycare and boarding facility in Anchorage. And they
approached us actually because of Janine and August. August stayed there.
Because August did the work, let's be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can tell them about that part if you want, Janine.
Yeah. This is Janine. Yeah. I had had to go out of town and had boarded my other dog, Jack, in August at a different place in Anchorage for a few days. And then long story short, down the line, the folks that run Arctic Tales had remembered me, and I had told them about August and the August Fund, and they just loved August so much and thought the August Fund was just such a great idea that once they moved on to opening their own place, they wanted whatever they could do to be involved with the August Fund. So now they actually take different fosters in to live at Arctic Tales and work on putting them in loving forever homes. So it's really great for the retired sled dog because they get to hang around with other dogs and awesome people all day and at the same time work towards getting into some great homes. And so far, that's been a success.
So my next question, guys, is regarding the folks that adopt these guys. Are these primarily you know, non-musher families or folks, or are most of them mushers themselves and already know what to expect from, you know, the Alaskan Husky or the Siberian or whatever dog comes around? And what is their first impression of the dogs if they're not used to this type of dog in their household?
Well, this is Janine. I think I can take on some of that. Generally, most of the dogs have gone to homes that are not quote-unquote mushers. I know some of our younger dogs or dogs that still have a good racing career left have gone on to some recreational mushers. But generally, I think a lot of them have just gone to families with active homes and active lifestyles. Here and there, there's a more laid-back older dog and a more laid-back person. So it's actually a great match, you know. But generally, I think most of the dogs have gone to homes that aren't involved in mushing. And that's the great thing, too, about the August Fund because, you know, we get the personalities and learn all about the dogs to the mushers and then do the same thing with the folks that we place them with, you know, because you don't want to place a really active dog into a household that's not really active. So we work really hard on making sure that it's the right dog for the right fit with the right family. And I think overall we've had a lot of successes. Obviously, it's not always a success. And Julie has taken back a few dogs into her foster care when it doesn't work out for whatever reason. You know, sometimes it just doesn't work out, and she wants to take them back personally to make sure that we're going to work on a good situation and get that dog into the right home.
So how do you guys deal with medical issues? I can imagine that some sled dogs, their career is shortened from, you know, things like diabetes or epilepsy or something like that. How do you deal with that? Are you guys set up to fund something like that? And how is that passed along to the new owner?
Well, this is Julie. That's something, thankfully, we, you know, because these dogs, the majority are very healthy already because they have a marathon runner's heart and lungs. When we take them to vets for vet checks and they run the usual checks, they're always surprised to learn how old the dog actually is. Even by sight, people are surprised how old a dog is and doesn't look it. So we've been pretty lucky in that respect. We don't have a ton of funds right now for you know, granting help to people who call us. Occasionally we get people that say, you know, I have this dog and, you know, that we'd love to help, but we don't always have that, you know, saved up. But that's something we want to do in the future. We've been trying to raise more funds so that we have that ability. We also have a laser therapy, cold laser therapy machine that we've been working towards paying on so that we can offer some of those types of therapies for the older dogs that have arthritis from running so long and help them age much more comfortably. We also have agreements with a few different vets around the Anchorage area who help us out with spay and neuters, low cost, and we pass that along to the people who adopt. And so we really try to work with people, and if situation arises, then we'll try to do a fundraiser for that specific need. And people have always responded well and helped us out.
Speaking of fundraising, are a lot of your funds coming in through the adoption fees? I think you had mentioned it was $150. And if not, what are some other things that you do? Do you have a PayPal page or something like that? Or do you have, you know, things like bake sales and that sort of thing? Where do you guys raise your money from?
Well, Janine can talk about some of the crafts that she does that helps us. And then we also have t-shirts that we sell. We have a calendar.
We have a lady making ornaments for us.
Yeah, exactly. This gal that actually didn't adopt a dog through us. She adopted one through Ed Steelstra in Lower 48. And she wanted to honor her dog that just passed and volunteered to make ornaments that we could sell. So it's kind of neat. And then we had some folks actually using their birthdays as fundraisers through Facebook now. But we do have a website with a support us link that's through PayPal and credit card and standard donations. And then you get the tax deductible notification back with it. And, you know, we don't really get a lot from the adoption fee. We keep it pretty reasonable at $150, and sometimes we waive it depending on the circumstances. And usually what happens is that $150, we turn around and spay or neuter a dog for the same amount. So there's not a lot of extra there. But we have been doing a lot more. Things.
I was going to say, yeah. Too, I think Julie's pretty understanding with people, and I'd say a lot of the times she ends up waiving the fee so the dog can get fixed and we can make sure that the dog ends up in the right home.
Right. And as I know that you guys are aware, but maybe not our listeners, is it's extremely expensive to take care of multiple dogs like that. And you had mentioned it's possible that you may have, you know, an entire team of 10 or 12 come in, and that's a big expense right off the bat. Do you guys use that fundraising money to operate that, or is a lot of this just going in through other types of donations, maybe in-kind donations?
Well, this is Julie. We have a combination that we do. Some mushers will send a bag of dog food along with the dog when they drop them off to us. Some will send us a few $100 to help with the spay and neuter. Some mushers have been very gracious. Some can't afford it, and that's fine. We have had, we use a lot of the donations that go towards the food, you know, because last summer we did have about 12 dogs from one kennel come and foster because their kennel was in Healy. And it's hard to get people to drive to Healy to look at a dog that they might take home or might not take home. So we had them come into Eagle River where we were at the time. And we were graciously actually living at another musher's home who had moved out of state. And so that helped us get started with fostering. So we combine a lot of different things, fundraising, musher contributions, donations from the public. A lot of different ways of, and we kind of cobble it together and pay for good quality food. And we do get discounts on food in kind from like Honest Kitchen and from some other entities like Mike's Meats provides us with discounted bones and really good meat and things like that. So.
So my last question, and of course you guys can mention anything you like, is what's coming up in the future? It sounds like that you guys are doing pretty well together and you're working things out through your little team of volunteers and the vets and all that. What's happening in the near future? Are you trying to expand this to go to be more aware, you know, maybe a little bit more outside of Alaska or what?
This is Julie. What we want to do is now that we've got an official location that we can have, you know, foster dog, multiple dogs here at this location, and it's approved by the animal control and all of that. We want to be able to evolve towards, not some, we don't want to have just a big dog yard full of dogs. We want to encourage more people to foster. For one, they can come here initially, and then we can have others foster and be part of the network. And then we'd like to be able to offer more, you know, vet help and things like that. So we are working on some partnering agreements with some new veterinarians in the area to hopefully be able to offer just more. You know, we'd like to help mushers because we know it's expensive. You know, when you have an issue, we've also asked to be a part of what's going on with Iditarod and their best care practices. We, you know, are asking them to include what happens to the dogs after they stop racing in their new best practices that they're coming up with. You know, make that a part of it too. And we're here to help with that. So we just want to just keep growing and evolving and helping more and get the word out more.
And this is Janine. I moved down to Homer a couple of years ago. I used to live in Girdwood, and right now the Julie, like I said, is the blood, sweat, and tears of everything with doing the fostering and a lot of that stuff. And I'm hoping at some point that we're going to be able to buy some land down here in Homer in the hopefully near future, but not really sure. And my goal too down the line, once we're in a position to be able to, is also to be able to foster and have some land down here where we live to kind of help that burden as well of being able to take in dogs and you know, in the Lower Kenai Peninsula down here, maybe getting some dogs into some great homes as well.
We're hoping to work with Alaska Airlines in the future so that we can get dogs on flights to the lower 48 and adopt them, you know, more of them down there, because as more people find out about us, then we have more dogs to place. We need to spread it around.
We're definitely going to put all of your social media and websites and all on your show notes page. But my last question or last comment, and hopefully you guys can expand on this a little bit. Maybe you, Janine, you had mentioned at the top a little bit of August's story. And, you know, This is a dog show, so I'd love to end it on a story about August. It doesn't necessarily have to be about how he came into your life. Maybe just a story about, you know, what he's doing these days.
What he's up to these days? Well, right now he's currently sleeping on his orthopedic dog bed. And he just finished a bone that had some peanut butter in it. That's our Sunday snack. I don't know. He's living the life. He was, definitely a different kind of guy transitioning. He was a really kind of skittish and nervous guy. And I think the thing that was so special about August was just watching the transition, from him going to be, you know, being this working dog that had never lived in a house and wasn't really sure, what the next chapter of his life held. And then slowly over time, watching the transition, watching him finally wag his tail and take a treat out of my hand. And I think just putting two and two together, like realizing, okay, the situation is weird. But once he realized what it was all about, it was really heartwarming watching him start to come out of his shell and start to transition into a quote unquote normal dog life, you know. And when people come into our house now, watching August get up and go to the door to greet them, you know, when we first got him, he didn't do anything like that. He probably would have ran upstairs to hide. So I guess that's the coolest part about August, is just watching him transition from a guy that wasn't sure he wanted to be a part of our household to the guy that pretty much runs our household now.
Right. And am I correct? He's been with you since the beginning in 2012?
He is. He is the reason Julie and I came together, was this old man, August. He's going on, we think, about 13 and a half now. You wouldn't know it by looking at him. That's the other great thing about these dogs. You know, when people are questioning whether or not they want to adopt a quote unquote old dog, if you adopt these dogs at 10 years old, I mean, some of them live to be 16, 17 years old is not uncommon at all. And he still keeps up with the best of them. My other dog, Jack's about 6 and a half, and they still play and have a good time. And, you know, they live as athletes their whole life. So they have a pretty healthy lifestyle, and they just keep going.
Awesome. Guys, hang on the line until we close here so we can talk. But otherwise, I want to thank our guests today, Julie St. Louis and Janine Armour. They are the folks behind the August Fund, which is a organization that helps place retired sled dogs from professional kennels like the Iditarod and the Yukon Quest and some sprint mushing here and there. And they're doing great work. And make sure you check out their website and social media. It's right here on the show page. Thank you guys for joining us. And this is Robert Forto on behalf of Mushing Radio. We will see you guys next time. Goodbye.